WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Senate fails to pass a GOP funding bill for the eighth time, so the government shutdown rolls into a 15th day. President Trump blames Democrats.
They want a right to extend, but they want $1.5 trillion so they can give it away to illegal immigrants. The people that are invading your cities.
The transfer of four more deceased hostages to Israel comes after an Israeli military agency said it would cut in half the number of aid trucks into Gaza. Bob Kitchen is with the International Rescue Committee.
Over the last 24 hours, we've seen a drop in the number of trucks today. Aid should never be used as a negotiating tool.
Cody Ballmer pleads guilty to arson and the attempted murder of Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro by setting the governor's mansion on fire in April. No one was hurt, Governor Shapiro saying.
We will forever be changed by this. We know that time will heal, but the scars will remain.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Game 2 in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, the Brewers and Dodgers tonight at American Family Field in the National League Championship. The Dodgers taking game 1 last night, final score 2-1, but a crazy play in the 4th inning. The Brewers' Sal Frelick in center field. Dodgers slugger Max Muncy at the plate. Bases loaded. Brian Anderson with a call on TBS.
And Muncy skies one to center field. Hit well. This one's got a chance. Frelick going back to the wall. He leaps. It's in and out of his glove, but he caught it. And now chaos on the bases. Might have a play at the plate. The throw. Not in time. Goes out. He's out.
Frelick preventing a grand slam at the wall. The first 8-6-2 double play in baseball playoff history. Frelick after the game.
The ball kind of tipped off my glove, and then I just kind of saw it floating there, so I grabbed it and just fired it into Joey.
NBA, the Bucks hosting the Thunder tonight in Milwaukee in their final preseason game. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Shutdown still going on? And welcome to Shutdown MAGA style. Because look, ideology first, power grabs first, praising dear leader while going after and attacking American workers. Going after people's livelihoods, going after their dignity. Holding healthcare subsidies hostage, forcing millions of people potentially going to spend more for health insurance. Almost 750,000 federal workers, people who are living paycheck to paycheck. Who knows? Pushing families into financial distress. Yes, this is MAGA government. And understand, you've got unserious people leading our government. You got Republican leaders who have prioritized political posturing over the lives of everyday Americans. People like Ted Cruz posting images of Democratic senators wearing sombreros or something, claiming the shutdowns over Democrats want to give illegals health care, which is nonsense, which is a lie, but doesn't matter. It fits their bill. It makes the undocumented illegals. And it gives us someone to dehumanize. Someone to look down, someone to blame. Now you got Trump running around, we're going to fire, you know, thousands of people, tens of thousands of federal workers. And what's going on is, well, we're delaying critical things. Food assistance, disaster relief, unemployment benefits, go down the list. And who does that hurt? It hurts the working class, especially the poor working class. Because understand, workers are just pawns in this political game. And as this shutdown goes longer, it's gonna make economic instability worse, and also gonna give Trump more control to lie. Because what they do best, it's what they do good. And this is what's happening. While Trump is sending masked militants to rappel out of Black Hawk helicopters into apartment buildings in Chicago. And the reality is what we're witnessing are people doing horrible things in our name at the behest of terrible people. The videos that have been circulating of amped up alpha males who have been told there are no rules, it's war. On our streets, it's war. In our neighborhoods, and it's war. And people who are like, I'm judge, jury, and executioner. ICE, the FBI, Homeland Security. What they're doing, storming into apartment complexes like armed invaders. What they are disguising assault on our constitutional liberties, on our rights. It's disgusting. They flagrantly violate, well, the Fourth Amendment, at least, ignoring the legal mandate for judicial warrants. Instead of using actual doing their job, they use intimidation, deception, and just plain brute force. Doors get kicked in while families are sleeping, while innocent children are sleeping. They're being terrorized in their own homes, treated like criminals in their own homes without due process. This is, again, outright governmental abuse. These warrantless raids, this coerced consent, these fraudulently presented administrative warrants are flat out unconstitutional. The violence that we're seeing in our name and the lies to shred privacy, trample on liberty, to desecrate the rule of law. Our basic freedoms are under siege by those in these, you want to say rogue agencies, but they're not rogue agencies. They are doing what Dear Leader wants them to do. They're doing what the Trump administration is putting them out there to do. So they've taken some really bad people and given them no rules. And what's interesting is, didn't seem to mean much. Just those people. There must be criminals. If 300 plus FBI, Homeland Security, ICE people went into this apartment building, must have been all bad. Must have all been terrorists or all gang members. Out of a 5-floor apartment building, they arrested 37 people. And you go, well, they got 37 of them. And they go, yeah, you couldn't have done that following our Constitution? Because what about, and again, this is our system. Understand our system. What we were told as kids was the important part of our system, that 1,000 guilty people go free instead of one innocent person go to jail. That the state had to prove beyond a preponderance of the evidence that you had rights and they had to follow the rules because you didn't want jackbooted thugs kicking in windows and doors at 3 o'clock in the morning, zip tying children in the middle. You didn't want that. Yet here we are. And they focus on, oh, we arrested 37. They're terrible people. And maybe they are. But what about the rest of the people that live in those places that are now terrorized in their own homes? And when will it be yours next? When will it be mine? And then how will you react? This is going to cost people their lives. You know, I have Red Hat friends going, they broke into my house. No, you wouldn't. Because they would shoot you dead. And maybe that's what it's going to take. Unfortunately, this is where we are in this country. We have an administration that is completely out of control, and the rule of law means nothing to them. They don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about the rules. They care about their power. And this is a massive power grab. This is all about, well, one, covering up the fact that we still can't get the Epstein files. And two, they are literally robbing us blind. They are looting our federal government. And the distraction is all of this chaos. All of it. It's all planned. And the sad reality is I still have people tell me, no, Donald Trump, you know, he's got our best interest. Still buying it. What's always been amazing to me is the biggest defenders of billionaires and criminals are the poor working class people who aspire to potentially one day want to be like them. And yet here we are in this moment where when is it going to be you or me? And our silence in this moment is unacceptable. You know, look, I remember in eighth grade history class learning about World War II and asking the question, well, how could the Germans not know? How could they, you know, hindsight being 2020, how could they not know he was a bad guy? I'm telling you, the guy we got sitting in the White House right now, he's a bad guy. They're doing bad things. And they don't care that you know it. And it's going to get worse. The one thing we cannot do, we cannot cover our eyes. We cannot bury our heads. We have to pay attention. We have to watch what they're doing. And we have to stand up and fight back. That simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed into law reforms to the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939. It limited the political activity of federal employees. The act was passed due to accusations of alleged political cronyism by Democrats on New Deal projects. Half a century later, Congress loosened the restrictions. In his speech before signing the reform, President Clinton explained the changes, saying, quote, "The Federal Employees Political Activities Act, which I am about to sign, will permit federal employees and postal workers on their own time to manage campaigns, raise funds, and hold positions within political parties. Still, there will be some reasonable restrictions. They wouldn't be able to run for partisan political office themselves, for example." President Clinton described the importance of the changes, saying, quote, "We've been supporting democracy throughout the world, but here in our own country, millions of our own citizens have been denied one of the most basic democratic rights, the right to participate in the political process." He ended his remarks by saying, quote, "I look forward to the infusion and federal and postal employee energy, expertise, and dedication into our political system that this bill makes possible. Today, under the regulations of the Act, most employees can assist in voter registration drives, attend fundraisers, contribute money, and distribute campaign literature. They can even run for office in nonpartisan elections. They cannot, however, use their jobs to influence elections or engage in political activity while on the clock. Today, there remains a balancing act between protecting the free speech of federal employees and keeping the government politically neutral." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So what are we, 6 days into the Trump-led government shutdown? And as I said earlier, what we're seeing in you know, what's right in front of us are the priorities that they have. You know, punishing quote-unquote blue states, gutting investments in future technology and infrastructure. But hey, at least the construction on Trump's $200 million ballroom is moving full steam ahead. complete with the gold-plated toilets, the glitter-textured wallpaper, the oversized gold-leaf mirrors, lavish chandeliers, faux marble gold columns, and of course, the plastic furniture coverings. A real throwback to 1970s mob movie. I can't wait for it, but you know the thing is this is what's bugging me. It's the chaos, it's the jobs that could and might be lost through all of this. And the priorities that they're showing. And here to share some thoughts on the recent news of these shutdowns, I've asked Brent Booker to come share some thoughts. Brent is the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. LIUNA.org, the website. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on again.
So walk me through this. What are we seeing? We're seeing these projects in New York, in Chicago, in Portland, in Democratic-led cities that have already been funded, being stopped. What's going on?
Yeah, that's the disappointing thing. I mean, the shutdown, which we're referring to as a lockout, is one piece of business. The other piece of business is within 24 hours of this government lockout, they make announcements of $8 billion of DOE projects are going to be canceled. They make an announcement they're going to review and possibly hold up almost $20 billion worth of work in New York City alone. And then a couple of days later, they make an announcement of another couple of billion-dollar project in Chicago. So, you know, within 24 hours of this government lockout, this government shutdown, $30 billion worth of construction projects are being reviewed. They're being canceled. They're put on hold. It's just chaos. And that's not what anybody voted for. Nobody voted to lose their job. Nobody voted to for this chaos or to be locked out of their government job.
Yeah, it does show an interesting first step in this. But what do you say to the person, Brent, who goes, well, look, Trump's just a good businessman. He's got leverage. This is the leverage those Democratic senators make them feel a little pain.
Using people's livelihoods as leverage is not a good businessman. Making people panic, making people worry, the stress of is my job going to be here next week? Am I going to have a paycheck? That's not good business. It never has been. It never will be. And quite frankly, that's why unions were formed in the first place, is because people were doing that. This is union busting. This is, you know, the recipe to create fear, to create chaos, to create stress, to create, you know, this environment where people aren't sure what's going to happen next. And again, nobody signed up for that. Nobody wants this. Nobody wants to worry about their next paycheck. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah. Now, we've been reading that these projects are being shut down. They're not being stopped, right? It's just, actually, let me ask you, because I don't know. I'm reading that they're being shut down. I'm reading that they're being defunded. I'm reading that they're being paused. Do we have a sense of what's been stopped? Do we have a sense of if they're going to restart once the government shutdown is settled? Do we know anything yet?
I mean, there's a little nuance in each of them. The $8 billion in DOE was for projects. Some projects were currently underway that they said they're pulling the funding. Some of that was going to fund tens of thousands, if not 100,000, you know, jobs in California alone through this work, through these grants from DOE. The Hudson River Tunnel project, I was on that project about 2 weeks ago, met the laborers, you know, who were actually pouring the concrete, digging the foundation, getting ready for the tunneling to start. On the New York side, getting, you know, to receive the tunnel boring machine from the Jersey side. Several hundred people were working. We're still working on that project today, you know, but I worry, as are our members, they're worried that, you know, when this administration says that the project's under review, when they hold the purse strings, what's going to happen in a week? What's going to happen in 2 weeks? Where are we going to be? And where are they going to be? And like I said, I met several hundred laborers, went out there in the job site, thanked them for what they're doing every single day. Rick, all they want to do is go to work. All they want to do is build our country's infrastructure. They don't have time for these games. They don't want to have to worry about their next meal, about their how they're going to make their mortgage. They just want to go out there and apply the skills that they have. And this is not a recipe. This is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And look, as someone who's been in and out of New York City, not able to go in and out with a helicopter, that tunnel is desperate. It's been desperately needed for at least a decade, probably two. And any pause, any way of stopping that, slowing it down, is just going to hurt the economy for the Northeast and the citizens of New York. But I guess that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's sad to create chaos, create chaos, create chaos. And it's time and time again, that's been the strategy coming out of this White House, coming out of Washington, D.C. Look, we just want Congress to do their job so that we can do our jobs. Our members just want to go to work. They just want to go build that infrastructure. It's going to be an unbelievable project. We've been advocating for 10, like you said, 10, 15 years about the Gateway Tunnel project, about this river crossing, because of what it means to New York City, what it means not only for traffic, what it means moving products up and down the East Coast in a safe and efficient manner. And any delay in that, it's going to hurt the economy. It's going to hurt the GDP. It's going to hurt all that. Most importantly, from my perspective, it's going to hurt people's ability to pay their mortgage, literally. Yeah. It's going to hurt people's ability to get health care insurance, to get a pension credit, to actually support their community. So it's bigger ramifications from our perspective of the human perspective.
And the thing that bothers me, and the thing that kind of shocks me, actually, is Trump views himself as a builder. This is, he's the guy who builds buildings. One of the things that I would have given him credit for in his first term, had he done it, was an infrastructure bill that, he ran on. He ran on a $3 trillion infrastructure bill. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all in favor of that because, one, it means jobs, but two, it also means that we start pushing towards the bounds of technological possibility as we have done in past generations. So for me, it's really disappointing because the one thing I might agree with him on, infrastructure, it seems like he's turned his back on.
No, that's exactly right. Look, he garnered a lot of support from our members. A lot of our members voted for him. He is a deal maker. He is a builder. But let's just look at this last month. Revolution Wind, a stop work order from the White House, from the federal government. $18 billion Gateway Tunnel put under review, whether or not we're going to continue building it or not. And that's for the Second Street subway as well as the Hudson River Tunnel crossing. Another $2 billion in Chicago on a subway. Are we going to keep building that or not? And all this work on the $8 billion from the DOE, much of which it's in 16 states, all happen to be blue states, all happen to be states where a majority of that work is performed, by our members. So the one thing from Revolution Wind to DOE to Hudson River Tunneling, Second Avenue Subway, Chicago Subway, the one thing all those projects have in common, they're built by union labor under a project labor agreement. So I'm starting to question and I'm starting to wonder, is this really about leverage, or is this really about punishing, our members, our ability to go to work? Because I don't see, like you mentioned earlier, the ballroom in the White House that's being constructed non-union right now, that's not being put on hold. But $18 billion worth of work in New York City is being put under review, and Revolution Wind and all these others are being built under a project labor agreement. That's the only common theme that I can find across all of these projects that are being put on hold or canceled.
See, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, the big ballroom. That's being done with non-union labor?
It's being done with non-union laborers, that's for sure.
I think that message, that's one of those messages that should be plastered everywhere so every union member in this country realizes that this guy's not their friend. And because I look at the bigger picture in all this, Brent, and, again, this is supposed to have been the moment the Republicans were reaching out to working class people, especially unions. And you've got the assault on all the federal workers. Nearly a million people have lost collective bargaining rights. You've got now 750,000 people who are affected by this shutdown and the firings and furloughs that are going on. I don't know. The message seems lost on me.
It's pretty loud and clear to me. It is an attack on union families, from stripping collective bargaining rights to federal workers in the first 3 months of almost a million workers to, fast forward 6 months, 7 months. And then we have a lockout this lockout where they're prevented to go to work, or they're furloughed. They're going to have to go to work, but we don't know if they're going to get paid or not. This is just that continuation of chaos. This is that continuation of attack on our members, of other union members, our brothers and sisters in the labor movement. And it's scripted. They showed us what they were going to do, and now they're doing it. We got to stand up. We got to fight. We got to, band together and figure out how we're going to, stand up and continue these projects that are so important to the country, to our members and their families.
100% with you. So you're part of the group that does that. Organized labor for me is the last line of defense for democracy, for saving what is and has been what we believe in this country. What's the plan?
Look, we're in those conversations every day. I'm in conversations every day with my brothers and sisters in the labor movement, with leadership, and most importantly, with rank and file members. And step one of this plan is to communicate to our members exactly what's going on. Make sure that they're aware of what's happening. And all of our polling, all of our focus groups, More importantly, every job site I've been on, which has been a lot over the last year, talking to our members, hearing from them, what's important to them, what do they want, and then educating them and re-educating them and talking to them and telling them this is what's at stake. And we've learned in all of these exercises, it becomes really important to them when it's very personal to them. And we've got to find a way to communicate that, whether it's through social media, through digital strategies, through, you know, op-eds, TV, you name it, for us to get out there, talk to our members, make sure that they're aware of. We're getting ready to embark upon a very large digital campaign at the Labor's, just so that members know who their union is, what their union's all about, what their union's doing to fight for them. Not telling them who to vote for, not telling them what to, how to get engaged in politics, but just talking to them and the general public about how important the union movement is. We got to build this momentum from the ground up so that when we have a mass of people, a consensus from just in our organization to then spread that to the other organizations to stand up and do what the labor movement's always done and stand up and fight for our rights.
Yeah, we've all heard the phrase, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. What we're witnessing is a crisis right in front of us. So it's my hope that the messaging out of this is aimed in that direction. Because for me, the shutdown, at least the way I'm seeing it, and maybe you're going to have a different opinion on it, but my view is, you know, Democrats have taken the position that healthcare is important. We don't want to lose what little healthcare we get for people across the economic spectrum. And trust, those two things are big issues. Some are saying that it's not worth shutting government down over, but Democrats don't control government. They do have a little bit of say in saying, hey, we want to make sure that what little social safety net we have under people's health doesn't go away. So I'm curious what messaging you see coming out of that.
Look, this is a Republican shutdown. Let's be honest. They control the White House, the Senate, and the House. And we've all been, you've been involved with, I've been involved with negotiations for the last 25 years. And with a negotiation, you have to have two willing parties ready, willing, and able to sit down at the table and actually negotiate and talk. That's not what happened here in this line. That's why I'm calling it a lockout. Imagine going into a collective bargaining session. The employers don't show up for the first five sessions. On the sixth session, they come in and say, you're not getting anything. That's effectively what's happened here in the last 6 weeks, you know, in Washington, D.C. There was no willingness to even sit down and engage in conversation. The Democrats finally, you know, they go in and the Republicans finally agree to meet with them 72 hours before and say, no, and good luck. And now it's a game of everybody's looking at their polling to see which one is getting, you know, blamed for this. I don't blame the Democrats for this. Standing up to make sure that people have health care, that's not a bad, you know, principled stance to stand on. Standing up to make sure, you know, that these jobs don't get canceled is not a bad stance to be on. And the Republicans saying, oh, just sign it and we'll get to it later. That's what we did last time. And it didn't work out. Yeah. So taking a principled stance when you are the minority and looking at this through the lens of negotiations that you and I and everyone in the labor movement is familiar with, none of us would be happy with how these negotiations took place. And, you know, at some point you got to stand up and say enough's enough. And I think that's what they've done here.
Yeah, trust me doesn't go very far when you've got a track record of not being trustworthy. Because I've asked the question before, you know, which is more worthless, Donald Trump's word or his signature? Because he seems to break both for working people an awful lot. So, you know, let me ask you a last line of questioning, you know, going forward, because I don't know that there's any reopening near. What do you see this meaning for working people? And eventually, what's it going to take for us to do what you said a moment ago, come back together and then demand that those, our representatives, our tools in Congress, actually work the way we want them to?
Look, every day that this lockout continues is a bad day for American working families. I want this to end. I didn't want it to begin with. And certainly wanted to end as soon as possible. You know, talking about healthcare, yeah, all of our, if they're working, they have healthcare. So it's easy to say healthcare doesn't matter for us, right? But when you look at how healthcare is structured, as more and more people that lose their healthcare are going to continue to get services, it just means that our premiums are going to increase. It means that our health and welfare contributions are going to increase. So when we do sit down at a negotiating table, we're going to have less money in our wages because more money has to go to healthcare. So this does have an impact on us, and we need to have Congress. Like I said earlier, Congress has to get back into D.C. to do their job so that our members can continue to build our nation's infrastructure, our energy infrastructure, and build this country. And we shouldn't be playing games with people's paychecks. And we're in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of American workers who are unsure of their paycheck because of the chaos coming from this White House, coming from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this week works out. I hope this is a short shutdown. I hope people are lockout, and I love your frame. I hope this is a short lockout. I hope, as I always do, people get back to work, and we do the work of the American people. Brent, I appreciate you taking time. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Sounds good, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, our good friend Brent Booker. Check out their website at Liuna, at liuna.org. Want to hear your thoughts. When does this end? And how do we push and make sure that they're doing what we want them to do? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Showers tonight, low upper 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, high upper 50s. Another rain chance into Thursday, highs in the low 60s. More showers around for Friday than drying out and cooling down for the weekend. Right now it's 48.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the Trump Republican lockout is being used as planned. As planned. Look, Project 2025 was very clear. They had their playbook. You saw it. Still voted for it. And the plan is gut investment in clean energy and technology. This was a premeditated move gamed out well before this election. And you know, I'll bet my bottom dollar it came out of the plethora of elitists who occupy our billionaire-funded think tanks that litter every state in this country. But people are fighting back. There's a coalition of clean energy groups, consumer advocates, and yes, labor unions, including the Rhode Island AFL-CIO, who have sued to restore billions that were already allocated for solar, this Solar for All program, about $7 billion. They are citing massive job losses and, of course, setbacks to the clean energy access for vulnerable communities. And here to share some thoughts on, well, why they jumped in the middle of this and what they kind of hope to get out of it. I've asked Patrick Crawley to come talk with us. Patrick is the president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. Patrick, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, happy to be here.
So let's start with why are you jumping in the middle of this? What's the reason?
Well, Rhode Island, we're a fighting state fed. I mean, we are not afraid to take on any challenges. And if we have to take on the federal government to make sure that our members are protected, we're going to do that. I mean, we signed on as a co-applicant with the state of Rhode Island to the Solar for All program, which, like you said, was going to provide $7 billion to the states around the country to provide solar panels for the residences of low and disadvantaged communities. And in Rhode Island, that would have meant $49 million that would have gone right into the workforce, solarizing houses and putting hundreds and hundreds of union members to work.
Before we get into the lawsuit and all that, what is the Solar for All program? So people get what we're talking about and understand what was taken away. Walk me through what it was.
So the Solar for All program was a project of the Biden administration. It was money that was funded through the Inflation Reduction Act, and it would have provided $7 billion to the states so they could stand up their own solar programs, specifically for people that might not otherwise be able to afford put solar on their houses. It was supposed to fund, you know, projects across as many states as possible and would have provided solar energy to 900,000 households across America. Now, just to put that in perspective, that would have been a $400 annual savings to the people that would have put these solar panels up on their houses. So this was about saving money for working class families, putting working class union members to jobs doing it, and reducing our carbon footprint substantially. I mean, a win-win-win all around.
Yeah. Which, again, you know, this is, you know, during the election, they were very clear, Patrick. They don't like windmills. They don't like solar panels. They don't like any of that stuff. And as you mentioned, it was part of the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, signed into law by Joe Biden. So it must be bad because, again, this president said anything that Biden did was bad. Anything he does is good. So what do you say, Patrick, to the person who goes, hey, this is why elections matter. Elections have consequences in our winner-take-all environment. And, well, you and your members lost.
Well, I would say you're absolutely right. Elections do have consequences. But there's a catch here. See, when Congress passed the BBB bill, the Big Billionaire Bailout Bill, and the president signed it into law on the 4th of July, that cut $16 billion in funding for clean energy projects. But there was a catch. What the bill said was that money that had already been committed to recipients or to specific projects was not to be touched. So what happened here, and what we allege, is that the EPA and the administrator, Secretary Lee Zeldin, went beyond what Congress had said that they were entitled to do. And that's what makes this lawsuit important, because it's not just what people voted for. It's saying that what the president and his administration is doing is exceeding even what Congress said they should do.
And it also solidifies the point that I've been making, that, you know, which is worse or more worthless, I guess, Donald Trump's word or his signature, because as you pointed out, this was part of their big, beautiful bill. They gave their word that they weren't going to do this. And then they decided, well, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, we saw this over the summer and not just that long ago, Rick, with the Revolution Wind Project. You know, this is a 1-2 punch to the people of Rhode Island. I mean, my members are taking the hit, sure, but it's the entire state that's getting punched in the head by this administration. And frankly, we're sick and tired of it, and we're not going to take it. That's why we're proud to say, you know, as the state federation, we're the lead plaintiff in this. So this isn't our attorney general. This isn't, you know, some high, you know, profile donor. This is the working class saying, we're not going to take this anymore, and we'll see you in court.
No, and that's an important distinction, because, you know, often there's, you know, we will sign on, there's an amicus brief, there's something that comes along, but this is labor being out in front, which is what I've been saying from the beginning. We need folks like you. We need the people who do the organizing to do the organizing and get people into the courts and into the streets, because ultimately this stuff trickles down to working people. And I like the way you phrased it in the piece, which is, this is about job losses. This is about people's livelihoods. This is about families. This is about, you know, communities having a tax base. There's a lot here that they just stripped away for punitive purposes.
Punitive purposes. And Rick, it's more jobs and lower cost energy. I mean, that's not a Republican issue. That's not a Democrat issue. That's just a good American issue. And it used to be the case that the Republican Party supported that. And it's incredibly frustrating to think that here we are supplying good paying jobs, union jobs, but not necessarily didn't have to be union, as long as they paid prevailing wage and as long as they utilized apprentices. I mean, this was about training the next generation of workers and lowering energy costs. You know, like we've talked about before, Rhode Island doesn't create any of its own energy. We import all of it. So by having a full range of options, you know, an all of the above approach, offshore wind, fossil fuels, solar energy, we're going to make sure that we're building jobs, but we're lowering the cost of electricity for every single person in Rhode Island.
Well, let me ask you this, because this was targeted at states that voted against Trump in the last election, or at least that's the way it appears. 16 Democratic states are the ones who are being targeted in this, Rhode Island being one of those states. And it was brought to my attention that, oddly enough, those states have higher union densities. So this seems to be... because these are union jobs, as you pointed out, seems to me Given the fact that the big ugly ballroom is still being moved forward with non-union labor, it seems to me that this is just classic Trump-esque union busting.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's one of the things that I think we're trying to get across to our members and, you know, working class people across the country, is that what this guy says and what he does are two different things. And working people are catching the brunt of this chaos that's coming out of Washington. But the only way to stand up to it is to work with local unions, work with our state federations, our international unions, and work together across, you know, jurisdictional lines and make sure that the members are front and center in this fight.
Let me ask you, because, you know, the reality is, as you point out, these are really good jobs. I don't think people understand just how good of the jobs these are. We talked not too long ago about the wind project that's going on. Those are going to be, you know, all kinds of union laborers and electricians and pipe fitters and steel workers and all kinds of people doing jobs that are going to put food on the table. Walk me through some of the jobs that are now going to be on hold, potentially lost, and what that's going to mean in dollars and cents for local communities, for the local school base, you know, for all of that. Because what we know is these investments have a reverberation effect across the broader community, not just for the individual who has the good job, but for everyone. This is that rising tide in the boat thing that we keep hearing about, and they just sunk it.
They're trying to sink it. We're not going to let them. But to your question, I mean, when you're thinking about a solar panel and you know, installation, it's not just the electrician who's going up there and wiring the machines. You know, it's also laborers who are clearing fields to put solar panels on. It's Teamsters who are delivering the panels. It's operating engineers who are using the heavy-duty cranes to move these things around. So, I mean, there's a wide range of skills and crafts that are associated with the solar industry. And you're right. Those jobs are good, middle-class, good-paying, working-class jobs. They allow people to buy their own homes. They allow people to be active in their community. They increase the tax base. And they make sure that that money stays in the local community. You know our members, Rick. You know, we're going to go to the local pizza shop. We're going to go to the local bar and have, you know, beer and wings while we're watching the football game. We're going to spend that money in the local community. That's going to benefit all of us across Rhode Island and across the whole country. That's why making sure that working class people have a decent standard of living is a good way to run an economy.
No, as I talked about earlier, the latest poll come out by CBS News is almost 60% of Americans say the economy is getting worse, and 52% describe the job market as bad. When you have those kind of polling numbers and you ask the average person at the diner, how you doing? Nobody's jumping for joy in this Trump economy. And this was supposed to be all about cheaper eggs and cheap gas and cheaper rent and insurance coming down and all of this. That hasn't happened. So I got to ask you, when you're talking to union members, you know, as you're going through your travels, what are they feeling? Because understand, the Republicans are making a solid play for union members and saying, hey, we're the party of the working class. What are you getting?
We're getting a lot of, yeah, we should have listened to you. You know, listen, we're a blue state here in Rhode Island. Most of our union members voted for the Democratic ticket. And they voted, you know, with their unions, but not everyone. And I think a lot of the people who did vote for the Trump administration are starting to rethink exactly what their position was. You know, maybe some of the other issues that were distracting them or were front on their mind, you know, was the reason why they pulled the lever for him. But now that they're seeing the everyday consequences, you know, no one likes to see, you know, armed agents walking around in masks on the streets of this country. It doesn't matter what party you are. No one likes that. It's frightening. It's scary. It's not American. And now when they're seeing the grocery bills go up and their electricity bills go up and jobs disappear, you know, people are starting to come to the awareness that, you know what? What we're doing isn't working. Maybe if we stick together in solidarity with the union and, you know, whether you're union members or not, you know, I get a lot of calls today from people that are non-union members when they saw the news about the lawsuit who are really happy that the, you know, the labor movement here in Rhode Island was taking a bold step forward.
So let me ask you, since you took the first step, are the other states considering the same kind of thing? Where I live here in Pennsylvania, you know, all across the country, are you seeing state feds who are considering the same thing that you're doing?
Well, I don't know if they're going to consider a lawsuit, but I know they're looking at the ways that they can fight back. you know, I have the opportunity to speak with my, you know, fellow state Fed presidents on a regular basis. And they're all struggling as best as they can to form the resistance that's necessary to the Trump administration, whether they're doing protests or picket lines or, you know, other kinds of solidarity actions with people that are impacted by this. You know, I think that's the thing about this. You know, it just so happens that Rhode Island, you know, we were one of the few state feds that signed on to this grant program. And we've had a good deal of success in the courts, you know, taking on the Trump administration. So it was a perfect match from a strategic point of view for us to get involved. But I'm proud of the way, you know, my colleagues and my sisters and brothers and siblings are fighting the Trump administration.
What more needs to be done? I mean, the reality is it's chaos every day. There are 10 things that keeps getting slipped by. But the message for me anyway is, while all this chaos is going on, they're robbing working people blind. Whether it's, you know, Frank Bisignano, the commissioner of Social Security, now the CEO of the IRS, or this, it's bad. It's chaotic, and it's not bringing down the price of eggs. It's not helping working families. This is bad stuff. How do you take advantage of that?
Well, first, we got to acknowledge that the labor movement was built for times like this. I mean, this is the time to be a union organizer. You know, we get to put theory into practice. We've always said that it's the labor movement that's going to protect American democracy. Well, it's time for us to step up to the plate. And I know we're doing it here. And I think we just need to make sure that we cut through the noise. Don't get distracted by, you know, the mainstream media and the people that want to divide us on all different kinds of issues. Stick with the workers, stick with the union, keep laser focus on what solidarity means, and we'll take on every fight that comes at us.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, clearly, the 18th of this month, you've got the No Kings rallies going on across the country, which I know labor is heavily involved in. You know, what's the message to working people, union, non-union? What's the message that you want to get out of all of this with the lawsuit, with the organizing going on? And what's the pull in?
The energy's on our side. You know, the other side are not putting 10,000 people in the streets. The other side aren't putting 20,000 people marching down Broadway in Providence. It's us. It's the labor movement. It's the working class. We're the ones that are standing up. We're the ones that are saying to our fellow Rhode Islanders and our fellow Americans, you're not alone. There are thousands upon hundreds of thousands of us who want to protect American democracy. They want to protect good jobs. They want to make sure that our Constitution stands for something. It's so easy to feel isolated these days, but we're not alone. There are millions of us across this country that are willing to stand up and fight, and damn it, we're going to do it.
There you go. I've always said, if you want to reunite this country, you reunionize it. Bring people back together to shoulder in the middle of the street, and you guys are doing some of that. And Patrick, good on you for stepping forward and taking this on. Wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and give us good news down the road.
I will, Rick. Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks so much. Patrick Crawley, president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you think other state feds are going to jump in the middle of this? Do you think other groups? I sure hope so. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that thousands of people marched on Washington, D.C. to protest against homelessness. They gathered to protest against massive cuts in federal housing funding. President Reagan had cut the budget of the Department of Housing and Urban Development in half. The protesters hoped President George H.W. Bush would change this course. They called their protest Housing Now. Estimates of the crowd ranged from 40,000 to more than 200,000. The New York Times described those who participated writing, quote, "They came from as far away as Miami and Beverly Hills, Memphis and Portland, Oregon. Some had walked from New York City. They included homeless men and women, families who rent but can't afford to buy homes, state and local officials, and prominent figures. A delegation of 500 homeless people and allies came on buses from Chicago. They were joined by famous participants that included Coretta Scott King, Susan Sarandon, and a performance by Stevie Wonder. Union members also joined the protest. One of the participants interviewed by the New York Times was a 24-year-old apprentice with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Cassandra Benton told the paper, quote, "Hopefully, now they will see everyone is united. They'll stop spending so much on weapons and other countries." During the protest, musician Tracy Chapman played her Revolution song, a fitting song for the event. According to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, in January 2015, more than 500,000 people were homeless in the United States.
While they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Got to tell you, good on Patrick Crowley and the folks at the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. And look, as I said to Patrick, if we're going to reunite this country, we've got to reunionize it. You got to give people hope and opportunity. You got to give people the sense of empowerment, the sense of belonging to something that matters. The right has done an amazing job of organizing people in their worst interests. I mean, I look at these groups that the billionaires have funded for decades. It's never about how we're going to make working people's lives better. It's about how are we going to restrain government from actually doing any good, which is a weird moment because we're in right now, because you've got Republicans out there talking about how, you know, we need to get government back open so it can do the things that it does. You know, the things that they're usually railing against. So it just shows these folks are they're heartless, they're soulless, but they're also void of any real believability. I mean, it's quite remarkable where we're at. And again, I've had people go, you know, did you really think we would see all of the things? I'm going, yeah, I did. And I actually am telling you right now, it's going to get worse before it gets any better. For instance, on Monday, you had Trump say that, you know, he may invoke the Insurrection Act. If the federal courts say that he can't send National Guard into to Portland from somewhere else, like they're doing in Illinois. Stop and think about this for a minute. And this is one of those moments where I think back to, and I've told this story before, election night 2016. I was watching at a watch party with a fairly conservative, you know, operative. He ran campaigns and stuff. And when Hillary lost, he turned to me and he goes, "It's going to be interesting watching Democrats become states' rights people. It's going to be interesting watching you guys turn into tenthers." Because he understood, like no one else really in the room, that Trump was going to consolidate power. Even back then, the difference back then was is Trump was still chaotic. He was on his own and didn't have the intelligentsia behind him. Now he's got the entire think tank world all lined up. Every one of those people that have been paid huge money to dream up bad ideas by billionaires, with no restraints, with no one to say, that's a bad idea. This is what we're living through. So to see this coming through, I saw they're sending the Texas National Guard into Illinois. This is what they want to do. And a federal judge declined blocking the deployment of the Texas National Guard into Illinois. The governor there, J.B. Pritzker, has said it's unconstitutional. It's an unconstitutional invasion. But the judge's ruling gonna allow it to happen. And this is one of those things where I'm going, Republican friends, remember when you used to believe in states' rights? Remember when that was the sacrosanct thing that, you know, you didn't want the federal government infringing on your state's rights? Well, here we are. You've got a president who is using National Guard troops from another state to go into, well, it's a blue state, you know. So I guess it's okay. And as I was talking this through with friends, I said, you know, what would have happened had Obama, for instance, said, we're going to send the Illinois National Guard into, oh, I don't know, Kentucky, Mississippi, West Virginia, you know, really poor states, welfare states, states that are going to be harmed massively by the Medicaid cuts that Republicans are putting on them. What if Obama said, we're going to go over, we're going to protect those citizens? What do you think the Republicans would have done? They would have lost their ever-loving freaking minds. You know that. But here we are in this moment. And I say good. As I spoke with Patrick Crawley a moment ago, elections have consequences. And we evidently didn't listen as a nation. So what we get is what we see every day in the news. Masked marauders running around, snatching people off the streets. A federal government running wild. And understand, my Republican red hat friends, cheer if you will. There may be a Democrat who has a spine. There may be a Democrat who goes, well, we got to swing the pendulum back. And we've got to do the things that, well, maybe that you thought Obama was doing to you. Thought, imagined, fantasized, but not real, not in reality. We are seeing history. This is an era that our grandchildren will learn about. Because these days, these moments, right now, are going to dictate the course of this country for the next 20, 30, 50, 100 years. And will you be able to say with a straight face, with an honest face, I did something to stop it? I was on the right side of history. Or will you be like, well, we didn't know. I was too busy watching American Idol, eating Cheetos. We're in interesting times, which is why on October 18th, you've got the No Kings rallies going on all across the country. And good. It's about time. It's about time we get people out in the streets. We should be doing more of it. We should have more demonstrations. We should have more organizing opportunities. Because look, they are going to overreach. Eventually, it's going to get too far. Or even the red hats go, wait a minute, that's too far. Even they will realize that the Kool-Aid has been tainted. And then there will be an opportunity to make this country in an image that we're proud of. I'll tell you, I woke up this morning scared. I saw a Department of Homeland Security video where the guy's talking about, you know, we're out there with masked people, snatching people off the street. We're out there fighting for the America we want. And I couldn't get that image out of my head of, you know, this is the America that they want. One where people can be disappeared. One where we take health care from people. One where we take, in, you know, Social Security away from the disabled. Where we kick the downtrodden. We steal from the poor. The country they want. And I gotta ask, working class of America, is this the country you want? Are you seeing something that you would be proud to pass on to your children and grandchildren? Is this the legacy that you want left in your name? Because they're doing all of this in your name, in my name. And if we don't take this moment to speak up, to stand up, history will remember us. So I'm going to finish where I started. good on the people at Free Speech TV for saying that they've got the courage to stand up in this moment and not cower in fear and not back down to what is a tyrannical administration. An administration that is fomenting fear at every opportunity. Good on them and everyone taking that stand. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Hamas releases the bodies of four more Israeli hostages. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says once they are identified, the families of the victims will be notified. Netanyahu spoke with CBS Mornings co-host Tony DeCoppel in a CBS News exclusive.
Take me into the future. Paint me a picture of when this is over. What will it take for you to say it's done and we've won?
Well, I think that for the foreseeable future, not only for Israel, but for the free world and for the civilized world.
Netanyahu says Hamas needs to disarm and remove all weapons from Gaza. For the eighth time, the Senate fails to pass a GOP funding bill, and President Trump again blames the Democrats, claiming they want $1.5 trillion so they can give it away to illegal immigrants.
This was a position that's being forced upon us by Democrats, and all they have to do is just sign a piece of paper saying we're going to keep it going the way it is. You know, there's nothing.